our folks. We are sitting around Helen's kitchen table, mm-hmm. and we have the honour of the presence of Dr. Liam Campbell in our presence. Mm. And we've just had a lovely feed of lasagna, and I suggested just getting stuck into half an hour of interesting conversation of how Liam has been since May last year. May this year when we did Jenkins. So you're very welcome.
May who? Thank you, Lord.
It's Helen's house, so I'm a wee bit jumping the gun.
I was going to say Tafalchin Road, but then I was told by a Gaelgore that that's doesn't, you're not supposed to say that.
That marks you out as a bit of
a learner.
A bit of a learner.
You don't only say ta. Yeah, you can forget the ta.
Yeah. Go get it, you're right. Very good. Great. So since Jangan was May, and I know Liam, you were very kind. You took us all out on the second day, wasn't it, or third day?
Day three.
Around Burt. With Desi McCallion.
Yeah.
So
And
I suppose a lot of water under the bridge since then. But
yeah.
Any reflections or any kind of?
Yeah.
How have you been?
Maybe water. Well, however, water under the bridge is probably not a bad way to look at it, literally and metaphorically. Yeah, I think for me, I live now in the middle of the Spearn Mountains. And I come from Burt originally, where we went with Jenkin that day under Burt Castle and down to the water. And it was quite sometimes going back to the place that you kind of come from in your childhood, you know. It was a personal journey as much as anything else, and it did make me. And of course, I had been with Desi there the week before, which helped. And indeed, I do want to go back. So, you know that idea when people say, "Where are you from?" Because it happens to me quite a bit, and we have a lot of students at the minute. And you know, one woman yesterday said, "I'm from Portugal," but she's 19, but she'd been living here since she was 3. But you know, what's home? So I suppose that notion of home came very real to me, you know, where is your home? And maybe you can have two homes. But I suppose the thing about Jenkin and being beside the water in the Swilly is that it really did make me think of that, you know, my connection to the natural world, you know, around me there. I mean, you know, we said Burt is kind of either in the Ashgates between two waters, between the Foyle and the Swilly. And I suppose, you know, if I'm thinking about my head part, you know, my academic thing got interested in rivers and water and the whole notion of a catchment. But that's, you know, that's my head and doing that stuff. But this was kind of like my heart stuff. It's where you're and your soul stuff. So it was very good to be involved in that. And also to look again at that whole thing of kind of controlling nature and you know, that whole idea of reclamation and the words they used there about reclaiming the slob lands and the wastelands, and yet somehow nature has taken it back, you know. So yeah, I do want to go back to it again, but it was so Jenkin was nice to share your home place with someone, to share those stories, but I kind of feel that I need to go back again. And so, because life has been a wee bit busy and a bit stressful and a bit just gets on top of you since that.
It's nice in the sense that you really were the person who introduced the concept of Dukas to us when we were fairly early days in developing what was then called First Nations Ireland, which kind of became Indigenous Ireland. So when we met together in Kildaff in 2016 and we had Maori brothers and sisters over, we went through a range of concepts, the Breton laws that come up during the kind of development of the gathering and all the rest. But Dukas kind of came to the fore as a theme, kind of being identity and belonging in nature. And then I suppose since then we kind of updated it because we got a wee bit frustrated with the static kind of conceptual side of it, of that's, you know, that's Dukas, that's your happy place, as it were, and Dearocht is your exile. And then where do we, what do we do about it? So we kind of went to the sort of adjective, is it, in English, like the Dukasa, which is, I suppose, translates as indigenous, but also translates as inheritance, translates as the activization of that kind of noun.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in the activization side because that's like 7 years ago and so much has happened, so much water has gone under the bridge, as you say rightly.
Yeah.
And in the wider world as well as our personal lives, you know what I mean? And, and there's been a lot of stuff happen that has been, you know, really challenging for people, and almost feels that we're in less innocent and more challenging times now than we were for it to be.
Well, the way I came to do this was, you know, sometimes I feel, and I know you and I have discussed this in the past about, you know, my Irish is very poor, and, you know, you come with sort of guilt about that, and that's that's another issue in itself as why we don't. But, you know, I had a very good colleague working with me when I was doing my PhD, and he was very interested in the concept, the Scots Gaelic concept of duche, you know, the same word. Mm-hmm. And really, I was looking at the whole notion of landscape and waterscape, landscape. And I remember the day that I read that this, you know, landscape is an alien concept to people here, mm-hmm. in that the word didn't exist in Irish, really. Because landscape comes in, and I don't want to get too out of it, but it comes in the 17th century as a view out there. You know, it's a Dutch landschaft. It's a created. It's the, you know, it's created landscapes. It's human impact on it. It's what you kind of see. It's the view. It's the nice view. Yeah,
it's separate.
So the idea is it's separate from you. And that really, I think it had a chord with me deep down. That somehow, you know, this is interesting, that it's not. And I began to explore Duhas. And yet I realized that the word itself is very, even it is hard to tie down. It's very transformative. You know, it can be, you know, like you said there, Lawrence, it's identity, it's bonding, it's place, and it's all those things. And yet I could kind of get it, but it's sometimes hard to articulate it. I think for me, you talked about activism and bring it. Yeah, you can talk about the opposite of Duhas belonging as Geraict exile, you know. What do you do with it? Mm-hmm. I do like the work of Alistair McIntosh, Soil and Soul.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about the three elements, you know, the hands, the head and the heart, or the soul, you know. Mm-hmm. And I suppose for me, I was working at Duhas and, you know, even dangling them concepts in my head, but actually, I think it's also what do you, you know, it's physically, what do you do with it? And one of the things that I'm thankful to you guys often for is getting me literally out there, you know, into the water, on the water, you know, and I've numerous times said that I think it kind of saved me from just being purely in my head.
Mm.
Also, I think that as a, you know, I have a sort of back, you know, background theology of stuff. The other element, so there's the head, and then there's the hands and what we're doing, the physicality, you know, our own body, embodied stuff, and then the kind of stuff of the soul or the heart, whatever one wants to call it. And, you know, I feel I need to leave room for the metaphysical or beyond, you know, in my own life. You know, whatever that is, I mean, you know, somebody was telling the last day about stones and about churches, and I said, well, you know, ultimately, it's people trying to think about their place and struggling, trying to make meaning of where we are. Mm. So in a way, whatever one wants to call it, I like that three sides of it.
We were talking, well, it's always Helen who comes up with interesting ideas, but we were talking this morning about the unknown, weren't we?
Mm.
And Moriarty in particular.
Well, and he introduced us to Moriarty, which was, and it's such,
it's not
gift.
Easy.
Not easy, but really interesting. And actually, that's the, you know, Moriarty is a phrase that we have all the realms already. As a human being, we have all the realms in us. We've been under the water, we've been above water, we've been on the land.
Yeah.
And there's something for me about the embodied part of, like, kind of what you're talking about, is that then we're, you know, we've got the head stuff and even the heart stuff, but then there's the embodied kind of practice.
Absolutely.
And it's funny when you think if we've been under the sea in our heritage, he talks about this idea of
anamnesis.
Anamnesis,
yeah. Yeah. Yes.
But
yeah.
For me, I kind of see it as this remembering of the yeah. animals that we were.
Absolutely.
And this kind of, how do we remember? We haven't yeah. lost it. It's all no. in there, but it's like, no. how do we remember then how yeah. we were in those realms, you know? And I think yeah. that's, I think it's a really interesting area.
And like, I don't know if anybody knows, like, I have a background in, well, this is a sort of side way of saying yeah. doing theology, but I mean, I was a priest for a few years and people know, and, yeah. and you know, with all that that brings and what I retain of it and what I got rid of, and you know, but you remember when you bury somebody, if you've been to, I don't know, do it, I think Protestant churches do it, mm-hmm. it's, you know, dust you are and unto the dust you shall return, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. when you scatter the bit,
ashes to ashes, dust to dust,
yeah. you know, but in a kind of way, I view that very differently from what probably traditionally would. But, you know, I kind of think about what you're saying, molecules coming out of the sea, you know, mm. we'll go back to it.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like the sand in the sea. I mean, that's yeah. what I will be.
Yeah.
And so I don't see, you know, so for me, whether that's eternal or you're still part of it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and it's maybe when you're trying to dialogue with the past, books and kind of ideas only go so far.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? And I think there's been developed a kind of embodied approach, I suppose, to
yeah.
the memory
yeah.
within the work of Indigenous Ireland. So
yeah,
it's kind of like, how do you access, like, what, you know, okay,
yes.
you can read a lot of books or you can
yes.
listen to podcasts, but you know, it's always at the behest of the author's perspective.
Absolutely.
And what their understanding is, be it limited or whatever. But everybody has access through their body and embodied work to make their own decisions about the spiritual or empathetic connections with nature.
Yes.
So you could see it like another library in a sense.
Yes.
But yeah, where do you see yourself going with that kind of relationship? Because it's kind of like,
yeah.
the intellectual relationship, I think, is really strong with you, because you're like really a historian
yeah.
and an academic
yeah.
as well
yeah.
as all
yeah.
the other strings to your bow. But then
yeah.
there's this other side to you, which obviously is, do you know what I mean? Bursting at the seams.
No, I think you're reading me quite well,
yeah.
and it's sometimes, if I'm being honest, it's a kind of a struggle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out this morning at 6 o'clock with our dog up on the top of the mountain, and I mean, mm-hmm. just the hill behind our house. And so, I mean, in a way, it's part of my, you know, so it saves you from yourself, but it's also from your head, I suppose, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I, and also, going back to a more academic, I mean, we're doing a wee bit of work lately with a shared island thing on looking at the famine and how the famine is commemorated in the folk park or whatever, and all of that. And, you know, the whole thing about famine memory.
Mm.
And, you know, and it's, you know, among academics, still a controversial science. What's this they call it again?
God. Epigenetics.
Epigenetics, you know. Mm. And memory. Now, and there was something in the paper the last day, and it was talking about the troubles, you know, and if your mother and stuff that's passed on. But then, you know, how does it go back? Well, if you take it at that generation, can it not go back two or three or four or five or six or seven? So that's something that I'm interested in. But going back to your thing, you know, the danger is that it's always in our heads, you know, and there's only a limited time you have on earth, and, you know, what you do and your own bodily health as well is something that, you know, I know a lot of academics who, you know, you're sitting all the time, and which can't be good for you, and are putting on weight, and you know, and I'm not saying not just academics, but you know, it's there is stuff about it, and yes, we do have to die, but as Anne, my wife, says, you know, it's a quality of your life before you die as well. You know, we'll die of something. So I think the embodied stuff is really, really, and that's why I kind of like the stuff that Alistair said about those kind of three elements, you know, for hands, read your body, you know, your head, and that somehow, if they're not, I mean, even the monks, you know, in the traditional thing, wasn't it, you know, it was, what did they have, a third praying, third physical work, and a third, you know, a wider study, or there was a kind of a sort that's of an like, idea that you got a that yeah. you know.
That's right. Yeah, you can't focus too over on one too much.
Yeah.
And we just started a men's group. I don't know if you're aware of this, Liam, but we've started a men's group in the under the title Centurion Yan, so the future ancestor.
Which I love.
The idea of a sweat lodge has just been kind of put forward by the men. Not that it's exclusively a gendered experience, but there's a lot of kind of keenness to uncover what is the value of a sweat lodge.
Yes.
In terms of that connection with the spirit world. It's through the body.
Yeah.
Because nobody really goes in with an intellectual understanding. And that's a real connection with other cultures, other indigenous cultures around the world as well as practice similar work.
I also think the work that you do with, you know, with the water is so central, you know what I mean? And, you know, a fluid and coming out of the sea, and that losing that connection is, and I, you know, it's, there's something quite profound about that, and it's just more than swimming, isn't it, really? And, but my, you know, and it is, it's back to, it's what you do yourself. It's not, like, I could get very, enraged in a sense, you know, started reading stuff about seaweed lately, and you know how it even is becoming commercialized, and so you used the word earlier, we become very easily overwhelmed, too much knowledge in what we do, and it ultimately it's what you do with yourself, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, what's that?
I thought it was a fly.
It's a little creature.
Little creature moving. Then I have to admit that I fear spiders. That's right. One was all of nature except spiders.
Admit your fears. That's all right. That's okay.
Yeah. Well, the water work is that Helen's brought into the whole kind of spectrum of our world. And we had a recent experience, didn't we, in West Donegal. Doing a lot of work in areas of West Donegal, but it appeared to me coming out of the water on that occasion that we so seemed to separate above the water and below the water, and in fact they're not as separate as we think, just we just tend to conceptualize them that way because we live mostly above the water, but in fact in an ecological sense they're not separate at all.
No,
do you know what I mean?
They're not completely
integrated.
Absolutely.
So we tend to live 99.9% of our time on one part of it,
and that's
how is that? That's not really Dukas.
And your body is also made up of, you know what I mean? Yeah. So that's the embodied stuff.
Yeah, that's hard to have a cup of tea in a bun under the water, though. So, you know, some things have to be done above the water.
And it's not as if we build a bubble and we live under it, you know, like someday in a submarine or something. It's more than that.
That's
and
right. Then,
like, I suppose Dinshankis.
Yeah.
It kind of come out of Dukas as well. Didn't it? Like the story of place. And also kind of that building into biomimicry. You know what I mean? So all those concepts were kind of coming out at the same time and ended up kind of in the Triskelly kind of like work we were doing.
And in a way, you know, we're putting these under headings, but they're ultimately connected. So I don't see any distinction between, so whether it's the man shed or it's underwater or the, you know, get into the sweat house, and that, like I do like the things that I did, and again in a more academic way, was look at the notion of catchment, you know, of a catchment, of a river catchment. And really what I take from that is just the connectedness of it. The late lovely man Tim Robinson, you know, who I would put along the side of John Moriarty, you know, has a wonderful description of catchment as a profound way of looking at the world. And so it's that notion of, so even I was coming here today, you know, I left the Dennet, left the Strool, the water is coming into it, then I come over the mountain, and I'm looking at the Foyle coming out, and all that water that was passing by where I work today, about Oma, is, you know, it's all, and it's just that, you know, wasn't it Edward Said said that, you know, survival's about connections, and it, so there's no, and I think, so even though this maybe started as Duhas, you know, it's totally connected, I see. But I think what you have brought to it, and which challenges me at the time, is more of the embodied stuff. You know, I spent some time with a few good friends lately in Scotland, and you know, I realized, you know, they were saying we walked up Arthur's seat, you know, and like they were struggling, you know, in terms of, and I'm not that great physically, but you know, I've had but you know, we're just saying, you know, they're letting their bodies go, you know, they haven't, you know, they're doing the stuff in the head, and
yeah, that's kind of easy done, isn't it?
It's easy done.
Yeah, it's easy done.
So
Belinda was interested in that kind of Belinda Vickers. Of who produced a kind of study research project called Women of Ireland was one of our previous interviewees. She was talking about how Ireland was so relational in terms of the way it operates as a society. So we were talking specifically about the famine, but also the kind of legacy of what we don't speak about.
Yeah.
Because it's a relational
silence
kind of network that we have here.
Like, yeah.
It's not to do with people tend to issue authority and kind of stick the finger up at authority in terms of what's good and bad, but what's good and bad is more viewed in terms of how your relationship is with other people,
as
opposed to the rules that you're told to follow.
Yes.
Whereas in another culture, perhaps it's the rules that you're told to follow that make you good or bad.
Aye. So, and some societies are really into that.
She was pointing out certain examples, but I'm just wondering, like, obviously that's a very humanistic notion anyway, but and we were talking about like how pain in terms of historical epigenetic pain is kind of worked through that relational
But breakdown, I mean, I haven't thought about this, and but I see it and experience it as opposed to in my head, and so this is isn't intellectual, but and I don't go into specifics, but you know, let's say in a wider area where I live, the amount of families that are really divided among themselves, and it's largely about land, is phenomenal.
And within why is land, just maybe, because maybe people don't get this who are listening, why is land so controversial in your view?
Well,
really, in a encapsulated
I personally don't know. What I mean by that is they're really divided. It leads to mental health issues. It leads to, you know, bitterness, at the very least, bitterness, and it also leads to people, you know, taking their own lives as it has done. I don't know. I think there is something about that, the connection. You know, on a simple level, you could say it's because generally the most of the populace didn't own their land until lately. And even the question of ownership is an interesting concept in itself. But it's almost as if when, you know, they got it, or when we got land from the landlords and the land acts, and, you know, is that it's almost like, well, we have it now, and by God, nobody will ever take it from us. You know, and it's something that worries me. It hasn't really been in our family that much, but, you know, in wider families, and it does worry me about society, what it's doing. And it's a rural. So why is it important? I don't know. It's, even if it doesn't make money, it's that idea. It's deep down, you know, this is our land. And what do we mean by this is our land? You know, what do we mean by this is my house? I mean, the bank owns our house until we pay. You know what I mean? But
is it informing, do you think, land and sea likewise? But it's less common because it's not really a place that people inhabit.
Yes.
But does it, do you think the ecology of it informs then people thinking about it? You know, is it very Fomorian in the sense of, like, they see it as this is just their possession? Or is there, you know, more transhumance? Like, people go, like, this is kind of like, ecologically, we want to protect it. We want to learn from it. Where's that?
You would like,
happening or not happening?
I think that's a really profound question, and I genuinely don't know the answer to this. But I mean, I do think about it a lot. I think, you know, there's in Northern Ireland, there's a mental health service. But I was going to say, if you're not in a rural situation, and in a small estate, it's endemic, I would say. And I thought it was only really, you know, where I live in the Spearings, but, you know, I know places in Donegal. And it's at a level of, you know, families are not perfect. We all come, and none of us are perfect. So there's always divisions. But I do think there is something deep there about it. And I don't know what the answer is. Is it to have some, you know...
Do you think it maybe comes from, I'm thinking of the likes of the famine and the sort of scarcity mentality and this idea that... Because I think sometimes what I see is that it's never enough. So when people have a lot of stuff, it's never enough.
Yeah.
And so then there's this kind of the scarcity mentality, yeah, rather than the sport, and a more indigenous approach would be this kind of abundance, you know, the abundance of nature, and you know, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That could be another way of looking at it. I hadn't thought like that, Helen. Yeah. Because, you know, it's, you know, is it, I mean, the Irish constitution and the Republic, the right to private property is very, very, really, really high. Mm. And that, and I think that comes out of a colonial past or a colonial present.
Yeah, better still.
Mm. You know, so it's something that kind of, right. No, you know, we're talking about ecology and, you know, this and, my brother-in-law rang me from Dublin last night, and he asked, I mean, we have an issue at home about wind farms, and, you know, there's an idea that the countryside is rural idle, you know, and it's, but, you know, there's a lot of internal divisions and a lot of stuff that comes on externally, whether it be gold or wind, you know, it is causing division. And I suppose, and on one level, it just saddens me. And where do you get the activism that you're saying, Lawrence?
And we happened to meet a woman yesterday who was involved in, kind of from the legal profession, but was involved in kind of activism around health and also environmental issues, but saying that in the north, it was very hard to get judicial reviews
To lead to change
that okay. People interpret the legal structure or the powers that be so narrowly here that getting an overturn of a decision or in terms of environmental protection is really hard.
Yes.
So there's that kind of infrastructure. But I suppose I don't want to leave the conversation on this note because it's kind of like it's another big conversation.
Yes.
Kind of then beginning to look at systemic thinking.
Yeah.
And like, it's a system that's not working currently.
Mm.
What do you do if it's not working?
Yeah, it was a bit like Linda Sullivan saying that environmental regulation is there to regulate the amount of damage it can cause the environment.
Yes.
So it's not there to protect, it's there to regulate the amount of damage. And I suppose fundamentally, I think sometimes part of the overwhelm is like, oh my God, the whole system's not working. It's not delivering justice in any sense. And then I think what happens then is everybody, either you kind of give up and think, oh, it's too much, it's too big.
Yes.
Or then I do think there are people then kind of pioneering alternatives and, you know, in some ways, like what, you know, Wurrimu would, from one of the Maori folk who came to Jangan, was, you know, looking at how, you know, there's this legal system that exists. So the legal system's there and it doesn't serve the kind of Maori families and communities. So then they just live in parallel to it and they create another legal system that serves them.
Yes.
Or what he was talking about was this lore and law. So their law was coming from their lore.
Yeah.
You know, in their story. Yeah. So it's kind of, I kind of wonder, are we at this point, it's almost like a bit of a philosophical crisis. You know, but maybe in some ways it's an opportunity for change or
indeed. Well, if you're looking at it, legal system is created by human beings. You know, I walk into a rainforest, you know, or a natural hazel woodland. Mm. You know, it regulates itself.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I'm going to suggest we go for a walk.
Yeah.
And get some of these things. Tease themselves out because Liam, it's lovely going back to think about Dukas again, because I think you were very much the carrier the vessel at the time from Scotland and other places in your studies, and it really allowed us to have a kind of collective kind of almost circle where people could hold hands and think and focus the minds.
Yeah.
And we were getting things from Maori people back in 2016 that, such as like, there's no human health solution to a human health problem, that we didn't even understand what they were saying at the time. And now we totally understand what they're saying. So those 7 years have really helped and took us the concept. And you can see that I think that everybody's thinking is evolving. So sadly we're going to have to leave it there, and that is the 30 minutes we've been a wee bit religious about keeping it succinct. And thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Yeah,
go be a maggot. And so on for now.
Very nice. Slan.
There we go. That just allows us to.
No. I think you're. Do you know what? I think you're really right about the 30 minutes.
I keep
It's also like lecturing. Paddy now is.